Welcome back to Lungcast, the monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site, hcplive.com. I'm your host, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. Before we introduce our topic and our guest today, just a reminder that Lungcast is available on all your favorite streaming platforms. Subscribe to @Lungcast on YouTube to get new and archived episodes, as well as interview segments and episode highlights as they come out. A link to the show page, as well as the ALA and HCP Live homepages for Lungcast, can be found in each episode description. And for those of you who prefer a podcast, you can subscribe to Lungcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your favorite listening platforms. You can also register for more respiratory news and insights at both lung.org and hcplive.com. Today, we are discussing race-based normal values in medicine, particularly in pulmonary function testing. Race-based normal values refer to the practice of using a person's self-reported race to adjust a standard or, quote, normal range for certain medical tests. By doing this, it implies that different racial groups may have inherently different physiological values for specific health metrics, like blood pressure or kidney function. This has been shown to lead to potential misdiagnosis and disparities in healthcare delivery. For this reason, this practice is increasingly criticized due to the complex and often inaccurate nature of using race as a biological marker and the potential for racial bias in medical decision-making. Many experts argue that using race as a sole factor to adjust normal ranges is problematic because race is a social construct, not a biological category, and often fails to account for other factors like socioeconomic status and can significantly impact health outcomes. While race-based interpretation of pulmonary function tests is also still somewhat prevalent, there is a growing movement to phase it out, with major medical organizations like the American Thoracic Society now advocating for the use of race-neutral reference equations, significantly reducing the reliance on race in PFT interpretation. This shift is largely due to concerns about racial bias and the recognition that using race as a sole factor in lung function assessment is not accurate or equitable. To give an expert perspective on this topic, we have two guests today. Dr. Meredith McCormick is professor of medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and Environmental Health Services at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health Department. Dr. McCormick has clinical expertise in asthma and COPD, as well as pulmonary physiology and pulmonary function testing. She serves as the medical director of the Johns Hopkins University Pulmonary Function Lab and serves as the immediate past chair of the American Thoracic Society Committee for Proficiency Standards in Pulmonary Function Testing. We also have with us today Dr. Loretta Quay, who is professor of medicine at Duke University. She serves as the chief of the Division of Pulmonary Allergy and Critical Care Medicine and is the current principal investigator of the American Lung Association Clinical Research Center program at Duke. Dr. Quay has clinical expertise in asthma and COPD and is a clinical translator program to study mechanisms underlying airway remodeling and airway inflammation in asthma. She also serves as the American Thoracic Society Committee for Proficiency Standards in Pulmonary Function Testing and is an ad hoc member for the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks for inviting us, Al.
Welcome. Back in 1840, John Hutchinson, a surgeon, recognized that the volume of air that can be exhaled from fully inflated lungs is a powerful indicator of longevity. As a result, he invented the spirometer to measure what he called the vital capacity or the capacity to live. Much later, the concept of the timed vital capacity, which became known as the FEV1, was added. Together, these two numbers, vital capacity and FEV1, are useful in identifying patients at risk of many diseases, including COPD, lung cancer, heart attack, stroke, and all-cause mortality. As more and more of this data was collected, it was noted that vital capacity increased with height, declined with age and adulthood, differed between sexes, and varied by occupation, for example, sedentary versus active occupations. Another early and consistent observation was that the vital capacity varied between social classes. Subsequently, descriptions ascribed to social class were overtaken by studies focused on capturing population differences by the social political construct of race. Average vital capacity for the same sex, height, and age was reported to be lower in non-white compared with white groups. Although some investigators argued for environmental sources for these differences, for example, early life nutrition, respiratory illness, air pollution, exercise, altitude, the mechanisms and quantification of these effects were not pursued systematically. Rather, a narrative of innate racial differences took hold. Now, as a starting point for today's discussion, I would like our experts to tell us about the GLI, or the Global Lung Function Initiative, and its role in moving toward race-neutral equations.
The Global Lung Function Initiative is an international collaboration of physicians and physiologists, researchers and industry partners, and they formed a network in, I think, 2008 with the purpose of trying to improve how lung function is reported and interpreted across all age groups around the world. And this network has become like the largest resource of reference values for routine lung function testing assembled. The GLI function data have included populations from different countries around the world, and the lung function from healthy populations has been used to create what are called now reference equations. And they help describe how a patient's or person's given lung function compares to what's expected for someone of the similar age and height. In 2022, the GLI Global introduced race-neutral equations. And these race-neutral equations are equations that do not require selection of race for application.
In 2023, two significant publications were released. In the journal Chest in August of 2023, The Effect of Race and Ethnicity on Pulmonary Function Testing Interpretation at American College of Chest Physicians, American College of Respiratory Care, American Thoracic Society, Canadian Thoracic Society review, evidence review and research statement was published. Earlier that same year, in April, the Race and Ethnicity in Pulmonary Function Testing Interpretation, an official ATS statement was released as well. Can you please speak to the efforts that went into these publications and their recommendations? And based on your involvement in the professional societies, how do you see the rollout of the move away from race-based predictive models for pulmonary functions progressing?
Sure. I think one thing that's really important to note is those publications were published in 2023, but really the work that went into and the discussions began years prior to that. And one aspect that I think is really important to note is that the movement that we saw in the field of medicine in general, really reconsidering and questioning our practices related to how we think about race and medical algorithms, began years before. And one point to highlight is it was really sparked in part by the reflections of medical students and early career trainees. There's an article published in the New England Journal called Hidden in Plain Sight. And that's a reflection, actually, of medical students as they went through their rotations, noticing that race was in several different algorithms in OBGYN, in nephrology, or how we assess kidney disease, in cardiology, and in one of the areas included in how we interpret lung function. And so those types of really heightened awareness led the American Thoracic Society and other professional organizations to realize that we needed to convene and really think about the historic precedent and why we came to be considering race and lung function. Was it necessary? And review the scientific evidence in a rigorous way. And those publications are the aggregate and the communication reflecting several years, really, of dialogue and of review of the scientific evidence. And as you've mentioned, the conclusion of these bodies of work was that the recommendation was to no longer include race in how we interpret lung function.
Is this also being brought up by the manufacturers of the spirometry software? Is that taking a role toward this initiative?
I think as we think about how lung function is measured, the manufacturers and the equipment that is used to measure lung function, those measurements are measurements of actual values, things like liters of airflow that are exhaled when someone takes a forced breath, the type of breath they might make when they're blowing out birthday candles or something like that. And when we think about how race enters the equation or enters the picture, that's really how we interpret the values we get from our tests. So whether a value is considered to be normal or expected, that's where race has been part of the systematic evaluation in the past, and that's where the change is. So the manufacturers have in their software different algorithms for how the data is displayed and how the results are reported. Sometimes these are percentile values, and those percentile values are based on the healthy normal populations that Dr. Quay was describing, the reference equations. That's part of the process of defining a percentile value or determining if something is normal or abnormal.
Great. So with this change, what are some of the educational efforts being made toward physicians regarding this change in predictive values and how to interpret their pulmonary function testing on their patients?
I think it's important to note that there's been a number of respiratory societies that have gotten involved in this initiative, including the American Thoracic Society, American College of Chest Physicians, the American Lung Association, and the European Lung Foundation. And they've all prepared educational documents to inform patients and physicians alike about the impact of these race-neutral equations. I was involved with the American Thoracic Society Diversity Group and had joined the Pulmonary Function Test Committee when I met, when I started working with Dr. McCormick. She's one of the co-chairs of that committee. And on that committee, one of our initiatives was to look at the effect of GLI Global on pulmonary function testing. And you know, I was lucky to be able to work with Dr. McCormick and two young committee members, Aparna Balarusamanian and Ian Huang, to start developing patient and physician handouts to talk about the effect of diversity on PFPs and the potential impact of diversity on how a lung function is read. And then from there, we started working with the American Lung Association to prepare educational videos. And that was a lot of fun. I'm hoping that these will come out shortly. Those videos are looking at just trying to explain to patients and physicians how to understand what their breathing tests are, how these breathing tests might change, and then what Z-scores are, which are included in the breathing tests.
I think you're getting to an important aspect of trying to figure out what are the implications for individuals now undergoing PFTs that are based on these new equations and the GLI predictive values. How do you see that changing clinical practice for some patients?
I think for most patients, if they have normal lung function or severe disease, nothing's going to change. But for patients that are on a threshold, they may see changes in they may see that they have now mild disease, or they may see that they don't have disease. And that's where it can be a little bit more confusing to the patient.
I think this whole change has really shed a light on borderline values, just like you described. And sometimes when I'm talking to a patient, the pulmonary function report at our laboratory has a graphical display. So someone can kind of see if they're in the green or if they're in the yellow or if they're in the red. And sometimes I can point to that and say, here, you're right on the border. And it makes sense that a borderline value, often there's no real magic between going right over a line that's between abnormal or normal. If you're near that line, it probably means we need to pay more attention and try to reduce risk factors or try to intervene early or maybe follow up more frequently. And so trying to talk a little bit more about those borderline values and how if your lung function is right near a threshold that might be considered abnormal, we should pay a bit more attention.
So what I'm hearing is that these borderline cases could go from being either normal to mildly abnormal lungs, and possibly would this impact certainly insurance implications, impairment implications around disability? Is that something that we need to be aware of, and is there some advocacy going to be needed in that realm?
I think those are great points. And just like you said, it could be the difference between normal and mildly abnormal. but it could also be the difference between a categorization of a moderate abnormality to a severe abnormality. And depending on the context, it could be in the context of a disability benefit, shifting between categories could mean you go from eligible to ineligible or vice versa. In terms of eligibility for a job, like becoming a firefighter or being a good candidate for wearing respiratory protective equipment at the workplace, that could also be a difference between being eligible or ineligible for a job. And there's been some work trying to quantify what this means at the population level. And at the population level, we can see large swings in terms of how many people could be impacted by these changes, for example, in terms of disability benefits.
Since you've both been involved in this, what's the status of this at your institutions with regard to using the GLI predictive values?
We started at Duke using the GLI predictive reference equations for spirometry in 2024. And then we've adapted that for gas transfer of carbon monoxide, and now we are implementing those for static lung volumes. It took us a little bit of time because we had to upgrade equipment, and we had to purchase computer software patches, and all of that is expensive and can serve as a disincentive for other places that don't have the resources that we do.
I think we had a very similar process here at Johns Hopkins. And I think it's important to acknowledge that there is a good bit of work that goes into making a systematic change, as well as communication. So this included updating our reports so that physicians and practitioners and patients could understand if they've had lung function over time, when we've made changes in the system, and making sure that our referring providers also are aware by being able to read our reports. And as Dr. Quay said, updating our software was part of the process, and that can come at a price. And so that can be a barrier to implementation, the time and effort, as well as potentially the cost.
And you may have alluded to this earlier, but what do you think are some next steps in trying to make this more broadly aware in the population of physicians and patients as to what is happening?
You know, I think that GLI global reference equations have been accepted by a large number of respiratory societies, but we have other stakeholders that are involved, and those are non-pulmonary stakeholders, like insurance companies and disability companies, et cetera. You know, people who are involved in those types of decisions. And I think it's important that we educate and then disseminate information, and that we do this broadly, and that we make information that we create available in different languages so it hits a larger audience.
I would completely agree. I think a multi-prong approach to trying to really engage and in communication around this topic. It is somewhat complex with different types of implications in different circumstances and different contexts, whether it's public health or occupation or actually a patient encounter. And so the more communication that we can do to different stakeholders like patients, providers, disability, government agencies, and so forth is important. And I think the support of the Lung Association, like Dr. Quay mentioned, in creating the videos and really trying to create different avenues to reach a broader audience has been, you know, one important piece in the process. We also talked about the manufacturers before, and I think they've been very engaged in trying to be on the forefront of messaging and also creating the reports and thinking with the laboratories about how to implement GLI global and the race neutral approaches.
Yeah, they've also been informing us of what are the needs of different labs in order to get this implemented. So they've been quite helpful in this whole process.
Well, this does sound like a process that's been going on for a number of years. So any closing comments from either one of you? This has been very informative to at least to the pulmonary community, I'm sure, but I'm sure others are going to take a lot of information away from this.
I think I would just say that I think this process that we've described today really has been based in considering our practices and continuing to question and re-examine and strive to improve the way we care for patients and the way we assess health, and the continued engaged dialogue with our patients as well as our providers and our medical community is really important. And so appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, again, thank you for your time today and for your volunteerism for the American Lung Association. For our listeners, if you want to hear more regarding all things respiratory related, we have a great archive of discussions on our show feeds. Be sure again to subscribe and rate Lungcast on your preferred listening, watching platforms, and visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters.